Hey, welcome to another episode of Slightly Above Podcast, All Things Automotive. This is William Page. I have Josh Blick on the phone on Discord today. Hey, Josh, how's it going?
Hey, it's going okay.
So you're there at the house and I'm here at my house. And I guess that's sort of the new par for the course in terms of working.
Yep. I mean, for me, I was doing a lot of working from home before all this, so it's actually not a huge change for me. But, I can't go anywhere, so that's a big change.
Yeah, I feel like that, for me, that's the same thing. I think I've lived kind of a life of solitude when it comes from, like, remote work, working from home, and I've always been comfortable spending the 8 hours or the 10 hours or whatever just in front of a computer, no matter where that is. It could be home, it could be in a small office, but it was pretty well isolated to begin with. It was just those points in time, like on a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, when I was ready to go out to dinner or, you know, go do something, go to a movie or go to a show. So that's kind of what I'm missing, is just like getting out of the house and socializing with people. So I guess what we're going to do for the next few weeks or few months, depending on how this thing goes, is try to get together on a Friday and have a little bit of social hour and talk about how things are and what's happening in the world and as it relates to automotive vendors and automotive dealers.
Yeah, I think things are pretty bad out there right now. I don't think I can remember a time when it's been worse for the automotive industry.
We were in business with Executive Eye and Dashboard in 2008. So we went through kind of a bust time, but this goes beyond that, right?
Yeah, I mean, I was there in the, I think it was 2009 in Orlando. We were at NADA on the showroom floor and it was crickets, right? It was a disaster. We had just brought out, we had just introduced Executive Eye into the marketplace. So we'd spent all that time, you know, building the product, launching it, getting all the materials ready. And, it finally kind of made its debut. And it was literally the worst time of all time to build a product. And I remember just sitting on the showroom floor, and there were more vendors than there were dealers, right?
Yeah, I remember a decision we made that year was that I wasn't going to go. So it was that bad that basically I didn't even go to that. That was the one that I missed, I think, in the last 15 years or so.
And I think General Motors and Ford also decided not to go to the NADA show. The large manufacturers decided not to go to that show. And I think a lot of vendors I've talked to still remember that Orlando NADA as being kind of a low point. And, it's a good thing that NADA was just in February because – you know, it would be a pretty dismal scenario.
Well, I was going to say, like, think of the energy and all the cool stuff that we were talking about. If you go back to that episode we did about the NADA recap, you know, think about all that energy, all that excitement, and then to just have that kind of turn upside down, you know, and go away so fast is it's kind of crazy to think about how quickly, you know, things can change.
Yep. Life can change on a dime. Right.
Yeah. So I guess if you are a business owner or you're a dealership operator or you own dealerships or you're a corporate group managing dealerships, that's the key here, right? Is adapting, right? And kind of being lock in step with what's happening in your environment. And I guess, you know, that's what we're seeing, right? We're seeing it in a lot of different places, especially if you're tuned into social media. You know, you're seeing all the talking heads, all the gurus who are some of the self-proclaimed gurus, but also the gurus on LinkedIn and on various social media platforms who seemingly have answers. Any thoughts about what's happening in the echo chamber that we call social media?
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's a lot of folks that are talking about digital retailing, and you know, we've talked about digital retailing on this show extensively and how the industry is moving towards that transformation. And obviously this moment in time is exacerbating that whole conversion process. And a lot of dealers are scrambling to adapt to digital, the digital transformation. And, you know, there's a lot of folks on LinkedIn that are trying to help the dealers with that. The problem is, of course, you know, moving a dealership from its normal operations to a digital retailing platform is not just a simple overnight process. And
right, it's not something to be done.
Have an issue with dealers who are trying to adapt to it very, very quickly.
Yeah, it's not something to be rushed, and it's also not something that you can do with the skeleton crew potentially, right? So, I mean, that's the huge challenge. I think whether you're an expert in the field or you're a business operator on the dealership side is, you know, how much can you really do right now? You know, is it better? There's probably 10,000 paths, but there's really three paths here, right? One is to kind of hunker down, do very little and cut your costs and try to come out as financially well off as you can on the other side. You know, another is to kind of, you know, keep that skeleton crew in place and do what you can, right? And spend some money to try to improve things, but don't go crazy. And then another tact is to like onboard, you know, digital retailing during this time. Take the time to like transform your business. And I don't know which, you know, if there's a hybrid approach or if there's a plan that is the right plan. I don't really know the answer here because I feel like, you know, trying to be too fast on doing something that the industry as a whole isn't doing. And also the fact that folks, whether they're going into your showroom or they're going to buy it online, folks just aren't in the mood to buy vehicles right now. So I don't know that whether we're a digital retailing situation or on the showroom floor that it's going to like change things around and maybe the way that dealers are thinking it might.
Yeah, and I agree with all of that. And you know, it's kind of that analogy of 2009, which is, you know, when we were, you know, you and I were hit with our company and our product in 2009 with, you know, I remember sitting at my desk and reading the readouts of dealerships that were forced to be closed by the different manufacturers. They were basically closing dealerships sort of arbitrarily around the country. And there were hundreds and hundreds of dealerships that were closing. I think it was even maybe as much, many as 1,000 or more. And we were looking every time they sent those updates, we were looking for the names to see which ones were our clients, right? Which ones they were closing.
I remember that time, yeah.
And that was brutal, right? The dealerships were just closing. Not all of them. It was like 5 to 10% of them.
Yep.
And that was very scary for a vendor to see all that kind of, you know, through the rabbit hole type of situation. And we're actually there again now. It's actually, in my opinion, it's actually worse because every single dealership in the country is affected by this.
Right.
And, you know, there's some states where you can continue operations fairly normally, like in Texas and whatnot. You can, you know, the showrooms are still open,
right,
et cetera. So there are some states where things are not completely shut. But, you know, in many of the population centers of this country, you know, the showrooms aren't open.
Things are limited. And a quick note on that. I mean, I don't think it's our place. There's plenty of other folks that you can listen to, watch, and get information from who can tell you, you know, what to expect from the major metropolitan areas, whether they will have shelter in place or they'll be significantly impacted. But for us, I don't know that we would speculate on, you know, if Texas eventually would close auto dealerships or, you know, stop having showroom floor interactivity in their state, as they've done in places like New York or California. So just as a side note, you know, we're not here to tell you what potentially could happen with COVID, but we are. I think that most folks who are in this industry are prepared for the next 60 to 90 days to just have a hugely impacted business, and, you know, numbers are going to be way down.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things we're talking about the personalities and all the different vendors who are posting things on LinkedIn is beyond the you know, the cheerleaders for digital retail and telling dealerships what they can do to convert to that. There's been a lot of really great companies and individuals that have been sharing just basic information about what's going on, and that is, you know, hey, a state by state analysis of what each state is doing. Hey, the service lanes open? Are the Are the showrooms open or closed? Are there restrictions on different types of things? You know, this is a fluid situation, and there's a lot of good information about, you know, what are the state's policies, because the dealership, you know, whether or not that's considered to be a business that needs to be open. It's I forget the term.
Necessary business or necessary.
Yeah,
activities.
Necessary business. Right. Yeah. So there's a big debate in the industry, which is obviously the service department is considered necessary.
Which I believe that's correct. I would agree with that.
And it's true. I think nationwide, the service departments are all open. But the big question mark I've heard all around is that, you know, the sales department, new car sales, you know, is that a necessary, essential business? And then the answer seems to be, you know, relatively mixed from the authorities. I don't actually think the states and the government have really decided 100%. I think each state has sort of a different policy. But, you know, I can tell you firsthand in California, you know, they've shut the showrooms down.
Well, you actually, I mean, talk about, you know, swimming against the stream, against the current. You actually went and bought a vehicle like in the last week. Is that right?
Yeah, I actually, so my car lease of my previous car was up at the end of March. And I wasn't really sure what to do because they kept telling me to trade it in, but the dealership showroom was closed. So basically I had to sneak into the side door of the dealership. They wouldn't open the front door because they're worried about the authorities seeing them opening up the front door of the showroom. So I had to kind of get snuck into the door to do my lease return. And it felt kind of very, you know, like it was some sort of spy novel, right? Going in there.
Right.
And, some sort, you know, of I gangster. Returned the lease, and then I walked about half a mile to another dealership and I bought the car, and it was a similar situation, which was, you know, it was very hush hush. This is obviously Northern California, but, it was almost like it was doing a secret car deal.
Right. A dealership speakeasy, if you will. Did you have the opportunity to ask them any questions like about their, you know, what's happening on the ground there?
Yeah, I'm not going to name names of the dealership I went to, but it was in Northern California, and basically they mentioned to me that they normally sell about 60 vehicles or 70 vehicles in a weekend, and the weekend I was there, at the end of the weekend, they had only sold four. So that obviously is an example of a really catastrophic situation for that dealership. I've heard different results from different parts of the country. Some people are saying the sales aren't that far down, you know, but for this particular dealership, it was pretty bad.
Got it. Okay. Well, I mean, all interesting stuff, all very interesting stuff. Let me see. Let's do a transition. You know, one person, I think you mentioned something about social media and what, you know, people, the content that's going out now. You know, I wanted to call out Daniel Kim, who's a colleague of ours. He's the CEO of Orbeez. And he's putting out some real, I think you mentioned one of the graphics that he put out, which was like the statewide analysis. He also did some analysis on the digital side about, you know, how many people are actually online looking at vehicles at this time, during these times, versus what was happening before. So I think, you know, what he's really keying into for me is this idea that, hey, maybe it's not time to sell. Maybe it's time to just try to add value to your partners who are the dealers, right? Try to give them as much information and as much help as you can, because, you know, your company, your leadership, you know, the way that you're looked at in this industry is going to be defined, I think, by how you acted during this time. And if you were looking to, you know, make a quick buck, right, by selling things, fear-based selling, you know, potentially that's not going to be looked at in a nice way in the future.
Yeah, and then there's a huge list of vendors out there, and I'm not going to name all the companies, but one of my former employers, CDK Global, was offering some pretty big discounts on their bills for dealers. And there's a lot of vendors who are following suit with this. And it's, you know, it's good to see that in the industry. This is a crisis, and you know, vendors need to serve the dealers and need to provide, you know, service at this time, because dealers are kind of lifeblood of the overall automotive industry, and obviously the customers too. But, you know, the vendors are moving in the right direction by giving discounts and breaks as much as they can to the dealers.
And let's talk about the vendors from the perspective of, you know, that's great if you're a big, you know, if you've got a war chest and you're a big company that can weather this storm. What about those vendors who are on the smaller side who may not be so able to weather the storm? What can they do in terms of like small business loans or emergency funds or payroll types of options? What have you found out there?
Yeah, and you know, you and I used to be a small business, and we kind of were in a scenario back in 2009 that was sort of similar, where our business was being threatened very quickly by the financial crisis. And yeah, at that time there wasn't a lot of resources out there for a business like us to kind of save itself. So we had to, you know, radically cut our expenses, and we went on a guerrilla marketing program. We did all sorts of things. But there's a program called the SBA Disaster Loan Program. And there's actually paycheck protection. There's all sorts of different SBA.
So of the $2 trillion, dollars, it was about around $400 billion, right, that's going into the payroll, the unemployment, and also small business types of loans. Is that right?
Yeah, so I mean the playbook for vendor in a dealership too, it actually goes for everybody, is to apply for these loans and to, you know, take as many loans out as you can, because the government is basically going to forgive your loan if you apply it towards payroll and certain rent expenses and some other miscellaneous expenses.
So I want to take credit for it, but one of the really cool write-ups I got was from Sean Wolvington. He did a whole analysis of sort of, you know, what the decision matrix was and what your options were. I happen to be on his mailing list, so I got that list, and that was one of the early resources that helped me a lot to understand, you know, what options potentially as a small business that you had out there. And there's a lot of folks on LinkedIn and other places who are putting out the message. I start to see this across LinkedIn, and it's sort of evolving, I think. I think even some of the banks that we talk to are they're not in the know as much as some of the experts on LinkedIn are about all the different possibilities out there.
Yeah, it's really, I mean, I think it's a huge lifeline. Just think about it. If you can get a loan that covers your people for the next 2 to 3 months, and then, you know, that's really a huge benefit for all sorts of small businesses. So my recommendation for any business owner out there listening to this show is you should be pursuing that with the utmost vigor, because could be the thing that saves you right now.
What we'll do, Josh, is after we update this episode, we'll put into the show notes some of the resources that we found in terms of some of the information about the small business loans and what we've learned over the last couple of weeks, because we've had to educate ourselves as well, just to be fully aware of what all the options are during these times. Now, you know, that's great. Let me say one thing that I learned is, you know, this may go beyond, you know, a couple months, and also the loans may go beyond a couple months. So if you're concerned for a longer term, I think some of the loans have like a year, depending on what happens with, you know, your payroll versus whether you have sales and you have people that are sort of furloughed or not, you know, not really having opportunity to work. You know, it may go beyond just a couple months, I guess, is the bottom line for what I'm saying in terms of the money that you can get.
Yeah, and that kind of brings in this, you know, the beyond just getting a loan,
right,
and keeping afloat. The other things that a dealer should be doing right now are, you know, planning that transition to the retailing, digital retailing economy, and, you know, teaching its employees how to use Google and Facebook advertising in a more efficient manner, and basically retooling the dealership to when this all comes back, when the demand curve comes back, whether it's 3 months or 6 months or 12 months, that your dealership is in a good position to go forward. And that's what people should be doing in the dealership now, is planning all those moves.
I think that that's probably the best thing that you've said this whole podcast, which is, you know, you've got to understand that potentially the sales and what you're doing for immediate revenue is kind of, you know, there's a hole there that you're probably not going to fill back in. So you've got to look towards the future and look towards, you know, dealing with infrastructural things. You know, even us as a small business, you know, what we can do is not think about, you know, making that next sale tomorrow, but potentially building a product or thinking about the sales that are in the pipeline that are, you know, 6 months or 12 months away and being ready for the opportunities. So, you know, as yeah. a small business or as a dealership, you've kind of got to put on your, you know, reach out and grab your binoculars and start to look down the road and start to think about where you might want to be down the road and do things today that get you there. Even though, you know, in the face of this trouble, in the face of the low margins or the no margins and the no sales, you've got to look to the future because, you know, and again, I don't want to get into analysis of COVID, but, you know, this is something that's going to pass, I think is what the experts will say. You know, whether it's a year or even more for the economic recovery, at some point we'll be looking back at this.
Yeah, and I think, you know, during this situation that we're all enduring right now, the concept, the strategy of, you know, how do I get the consumer to come to the dealership? You know, how do I get them to come on down to the dealership? That strategy is now kind of flipped on its head, literally, in the new strategy is how do you get the dealership to come to the consumer? And, you know, that's been something we've talked about before,
yep.
which is something that we think dealers should be planning to do, that make that transition. And this scenario has really heightened that.
I would almost think, transition. Josh, that the no-touch service actually is a faster, you know, fix for a dealership than digital retailing right now, because service centers are still open, you know. Whether 2 months go by or 6 months go by, people are going to need services to their vehicles. And also people aren't going to want to be, you know, around a lot of other folks. They're going to want to do their social distancing. So if you could bolt on a strategy where you could pick up the car and deliver it and, you know, make sure that it's clean and that the people are protected in that whole kind of chain. If you could do that, that would be a tremendous value to people. Like, for example, my car today, it shows the service light that it needs to go in, but I'm not thinking about going in. If I got a message or a text or something that said, hey, you know, we can bring your car in and we can get it back to you, you don't have to leave your house, you know, I might take that deal.
Yeah.
All right.
I agree.
Yep. All right. Anything else that you wanted to cover, you know, in all this whole sort of what the state of things are today? I know it's evolving very quickly and we're trying to stay up to speed on things as they change and adapt to it.
You know, one thought that occurred to me about this is I always try to find a silver lining in everything. I mean, obviously things are pretty bad out there and I think everyone knows that. And I really feel for a lot of the dealerships that I've worked with over my career. And I sit here very concerned for the whole industry. And, you know, it kind of has this somber effect on me every single day, just knowing all the scrambling that's going on out there. I mean, when I was in that dealership earlier in the week, it was almost like, you know, a funeral in the dealership, and it was sad. And it was just really tough to see all that going on. And because the dealership's usually a vibrant place full of energy, and, you know, having said all that and all the troubles that are here, you know, one thing that you can glean from all this is that, you know, the industry is going to change forever, actually, if you think about it. And, you know, whether it's, you know, the use of personal vehicles is going to be at a premium, so that, you know, this whole concept of sharing cars and sharing rides and all these things that have been, you know, so on the forefront of everyone's, you know, horizon, you know, some of those things might actually take a longer pause and shift back to people wanting to have a secure and safe, you know, personal vehicle going forward, at least for the next few years. That actually might be an enduring legacy of this whole situation, and that will mean a lot for car dealers if you think about it.
Yeah, I think that's huge, and I think that is probably a reality, right? It's sort of like, you know, the children of the Depression, right? Where they changed their spending habits for their entire lives, right? So
yeah,
with the psychologists and other folks and doctors will probably study this, you know, 50 years from now as a point of inflection for society and where certain things changed in the way that we interact. So
yeah, I went to the store the other day and I'm never going to look at a shopping cart, a handlebar the same way.
Right.
I mean, you look at that handlebar on the shopping cart and you're kind of looking at it with horror. Right.
Sure.
It's like, am I really going to go jumping into Ubers and Lyfts and kind of freewheeling in the gig economy? Is that going to just come roaring back immediately? I think the answer is hell no. Right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and you know, like culturally, like, you know, Asia was always a culture that was okay with wearing masks and gloves in public. And we always, or not we, but myself, I would look at that and say like, oh, that's kind of nuts. You know, why would they do that? And, you know, that's becoming more than normal, at least now during this outbreak. But I don't know if, you know, in the future, like, you know, I'm going to always keep hand sanitizer, you know, in my vehicle and be using it as soon as I get in as part of like putting my seatbelt on. You know, I put my seatbelt on, then I put on my hand sanitizer and I'm ready to go. You know, maybe that's the new norm.
Yeah, so I mean, we'll have another show about kind of the long-term effects of this situation, this COVID situation on the consumer. But suffice to say, we're in a different reality, and I think most of us can't even contemplate how deeply this is going to affect the average consumer and how the dealership should react to that. I mean, obviously, the dealership should sanitize all the vehicles and make a showing to the consumer that they're doing that, right? When it comes to a service RO or, you know, when they buy the car or anything like that, that's a given. But there's so many ramifications that are going to happen. We just need to stay tuned to all of that and continue the conversation.
Yeah, so I think, and that's a good wrap. I'll say this. I think, you know, we shelved a number of episodes that we had done because we're adapting to the change here. And some of the things that seem like big scandals, like the car gurus at the time, kind of fell by the wayside, right? You know, because of all of this, you know, news of high importance. So we're kind of changing things around. We'd look to you guys to let us know if we're on the right path here. And we'll continue doing these, possibly putting them out once a week, but more of episodes that are much more focused on like what's happening now and what, you know, what we're seeing out there in terms of automotive and where the direction is heading and what you can do to come out at least even or better on the other side. That's what we're going to focus our time on. So we'd love it if you guys could comment or reach out to us and let us know if this is a direction that you like for this podcast. Josh, did you have anything else that you want to say besides goodbye?
No, I mean, the only thing I would say is that the more I think about this scenario as it's been unfolding is that, you know, this is obviously unprecedented and you can't really compare it to anything, but it almost has the same effect as if this was like a major war that has broken out in the world, right? I mean, that's the way it feels. It, you know, we're not fighting another country, but it's almost like the economy and the citizens are on this war footing, and they're kind of, everything is changing to accommodate this war.
I mean, there are a lot of parallels, right? I'll just interrupt you really quickly and say, like, you know, you've got the major auto manufacturers shifting production to, like, you know, to tools that are needed for this war, which are ventilators and other things like that.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, that's kind of the way I'm looking at this. And then the question is, you know, okay, how long is the war? What happens during the war? Who are the ones who are going to help turn the tide to win the war? Who are the victims of the war? And where is this all going? And there's obviously a lot of opinions about that, but I think the most important thing is information, and dealers paying attention to what's going on and, you know, listening to the news out there as it affects the automotive industry, and we're going to do our best as being part of this family of automotive industry. In the automotive industry, we're going to do our best to let you know what we're seeing out there as we go about our days.
Yep. Okay, good. And I think that podcasts have been deemed as necessary activities. So we're in the clear. We're in the clear on that. So with that being said, everyone, thank you so much for listening, and look out for the next episode pretty shortly. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.